Welcome to 2015, where the Kansas City Chiefs can't help but make news. They're cutting players, we're sad to lose. And everything is kind of mattering all at once because people think the Chiefs could actually win the AFC West. This is Roughing the Kicker. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe, here on Arrowhead Addict, Arrowhead Addict Radio. So much going on. I was about to start this show, had everything ready to go, all the notes prepared, and then Andy Reid comes out and says, here's the offensive line for week one, which is going to be the first story on this episode, because there's a lot there that I don't think anyone expected. Plus, we'll talk about the other news that's gone on, especially the roster cuts the Chiefs have made, and a couple guys that they've brought in. I'll tell you about those new Chiefs, what we can expect from them, and we'll look at some of the surprising releases the Chiefs made. Also, they went 4-0 this preseason. We'll talk a little bit about the Rams game and what the undefeated preseason actually means. But thanks to Andy Reid and this announcement that came early this morning, Labor Day morning, the offensive line is different, and there's a lot to debate about it. Quickly, before we get to the offensive line, I want to say another thank you to Christine Roadlander at C Roadlander on Twitter, being the top Patreon again for this show. Patreon, if you haven't heard yet, is a tipping rewards-based website where you can help support this show with a little bit of your own money. Right now, I've got a couple of different hardware issues that I'm having with producing this podcast, and a little bit of money from a few of you on Patreon would wipe that issue out entirely. Plus, Roughing the Kicker on iTunes has hit its hosting cap, essentially. So with a little bit of money there, we continue to make sure that any number of people can get Roughing the Kicker through iTunes. And then again, I'd like to be able to invest in some software to have callers and guests on the show. I can't currently do that, but with a little bit of money from a few of you, that will become a reality. So you can look at the rewards and the options and what I'm shooting for at patreon.com/RTK. That's patreon.com/RTK. Just go check it out. If you have any questions, you can tweet me at JB Briscoe. Be happy to answer anything you might have there. But if you can help support the show, it will continue to get bigger and better and reach out to more and more people. And I would greatly appreciate that. Even if you can't financially support the show, share it with your Chiefs fans' friends. And the larger that web reaches, hopefully the larger financial support we'll be able to have to continue to blow the show up. I'm also hoping to go to 2 shows a week during the regular season, a Thursday or Friday and a Monday or Tuesday show. And that's currently not totally locked in. Hopefully, regardless of how Patreon plays out, it will happen. But we can try to push towards that and make that a lock for this season. With patreon.com/RTK, check out what you can do to help support the show. Now, I know you're tired of that. Let's talk about the real football stories here. The offensive line shakeup. Okay, Andy Reid, we all see you. Starting offensive line per Andy Reid today on Labor Day when I'm recording this show. Left tackle, Donald Stevenson. Left guard, Ben Grubbs. Center, Mitch Morse. Right guard, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. And right tackle, Eric Fisher. Okay, there's a lot there. Ben Grubbs at left guard, we knew it was going to happen. I'll talk about the cuts in a little bit, but the Chiefs released Eric Cush, so we knew Mitch Morse at center would happen. Andy Reid had really given some strong praise to LDT, Duvernay-Tardif, whose name I'm going to have to pronounce, I guess, because he's on the team and starting now. I thought he might not make it through these roster cuts at the beginning of the preseason. But those interior guys, Grubbs and Morse, make all the sense in the world. LDT, pretty big surprise. Whenever Jeff Allen comes back, I wouldn't be shocked to see him jump over LDT at right guard. But Andy Reid has spoken very highly of him the last couple of days. He said that Andy Reid said that he's one of the best 5 offensive linemen on the team right now. He said that before this was announced. So LDT at right guard surprises me a little bit. But the big story here is obviously the tackles. Donald Stevenson, whenever Eric Fisher was injured in the preseason, Donald Stevenson played very, very well at left tackle. That's a good thing. However, Eric Fisher, obviously former number one overall pick, Eric Fisher, for all intents and purposes, seemed to be the number one left tackle, the left tackle of the future, the best offensive line on this team, in my opinion, or at least was moving in that direction, moving him to the right side. At first, looks like a pretty clear demotion and a pretty big mark on Eric Fisher's report card. Now, I think it's a little more, I think it's much more complex than that. But let's just go ahead and look at what this means for Eric Fisher. Eric Fisher goes from the left side, where he was last year and improved throughout the season. He played his rookie year at right tackle and improved throughout the year, but was never very good there. And I really thought that Fisher looked fantastic whenever he played at left tackle in the preseason, and I thought he was going to continue to develop. at that left side, moving him to right tackle where he got either no or very little work in training camp and definitely no work in the preseason, that could really shake up Eric Fisher. That's the big concern I have here, is if Fisher spent all of last year and all this offseason locking himself into that left tackle spot, trying to really establish himself there, get used to that position. They are different positions. I'll talk about how that impacts Donald Stevenson here in just a second. But I've seen Eric Fisher improving and really focusing in on locking down on that left side. Now for him to flip to the right a few days before, 6 days before the first game, that really scares me. I don't know how Eric Fisher is going to deal with that really, really short notice position change. You would never expect a running back to go to a receiver 6 days before the draft or vice versa. If all of a sudden the Chiefs said, hey, Albert Wilson, you've got to take 10 carries in week one. That you would just, assuming that Albert Wilson, had the physical tools to be a running back or whatever, you would never expect that. There's too much. That's too complex, and it's especially at an offensive line spot when the thing you need most are reps. You could study a playbook all you want, but if you're going to move from left tackle to right tackle or vice versa, you've got to get experience in that spot. So Eric Fisher moving to the right side is going to be challenging. However, here's why I don't think it's a demotion. Week one, Eric Fisher was going to be matched up against Jadeveon Clowney, last year's number one overall pick for the Houston Texans. Now, Eric Fisher's going to be lining up against J.J. Watt, the unquestioned best pass rusher in football with one argument from Justin Houston. Undoubtedly the best defensive lineman in football. That's without question. Eric Fisher, it's hard to say Eric Fisher just got demoted whenever Eric Fisher is now set to line up against the best defensive lineman in football by a mile. I think what this really boils down to is where Donald Stevenson is best. Donald Stevenson at right tackle has seemed awkward, has not been as good as whenever we've seen him at left tackle. Now, I'm not super convinced he's a great left tackle, and frankly, I think he's a worse left tackle than Eric Fisher would be right now. However, somebody on Twitter, Ryan Tracy, at Ryan Tracy NFL on Twitter, said, think of it like it's Madden. Now, I don't necessarily agree with whatever these rankings are, but I'll throw them out here. Say that Eric Fisher is an 83 on Madden at left tackle and an 81 at right tackle. You would say, okay, well, he went to play him at left tackle. He's a pretty good left tackle moving up. But Donald Stevenson might be an 82 at left tackle and a 72 at right tackle, where Donald Stevenson is clearly a better player within himself at left tackle. Now, I would say that the same is true for Eric Fisher. I think right now, Eric Fisher's a better left tackle than he is his right tackle. However, the drop-off is bigger for Donald Stevenson, so I can see that argument playing through. And again, with how the NFL currently is, and this is going to frustrate the crap out of me for weeks, I can tell this, I know this is going to happen already on Twitter, people going, wow, you moved the number one overall pick to the right side. And that's a fair question. And Terez Paylor tweeted, I asked Reed if it was disappointing to have a number one pick move to the right side. Very testily responded, quote, did you listen to what I said? That's a fair question from Terez Paylor. Don't get me wrong. However, people going, "Oh, you're moving Eric Fisher to the right side. He's the next big NFL top of the line offensive lineman draft bust." Slow your roll, Justin Houston. If you watch your own team here, if you watch the Kansas City Chiefs play football, you'll notice that Justin Houston moves around, but he predominantly matches up against right tackles. The same is true for J.J. Watt, who the Chiefs are going to see in Week One. The left tackle, right tackle thing, yes, it's still the quarterback's blind side. Yes, Donald Stevenson is blocking Alex Smith's blind side right now. But that does not mean he's going up against the better pass rusher. In a lot of cases, I would say that Eric Fisher is the more physical of the offensive linemen between Donald Stevenson and himself. Eric Fisher is more physical, which might match him up better for the side where you have a little bit more room for a mistake, but you're going to be more physically powering, which is the right side, because the quarterback can see that coming. Donald Stevenson is a more finesse offensive lineman by a little bit, in my opinion, where his job is just to keep his side clear no matter what. He'll probably get the less physically overpowering guys for the most part and more of the finesse pass rushers on that side. If that's how it generally plays out, this makes sense for the Chiefs. You put the more powerful guy, Eric Fisher, up against the more powerful pass rusher like J.J. Watt or Justin Houston, and you put the more finesse offensive lineman, Donald Stevenson, up against the more finesse pass rusher like J.J. like Jadeveon Clowney would be in Week 1. Overall, I think that move, it makes sense, but what scares me is the learning curve because Donald Stevenson seems more confident and more of a natural fit at left tackle. Again, for himself, he makes more sense at left tackle. But the learning curve from Eric Fisher to go from right tackle to left tackle back to right tackle, I'm afraid will either stunt his growth or he'll just look really slow for a couple of games as he gets back in that right tackle spot. That's what really scares me here. However, for the most part, I actually think the more I think about it, the more I look at that and look at the finesse versus power pass rushers and pass blockers, the better I start to feel about it. Now, I'm still pretty scared at right guard, LDT getting the starting spot over Zach Fulton, and maybe over Jeff Allen whenever Jeff Allen returns. That concerns me on a deep level. But this is what the Chiefs' offensive line is rolling with right now, and I'm pretty comfortable with what they're doing at the tackle positions. However, again, Stevenson, Grubbs, Morse, LDT, Fisher, that's starting week one. One of those guys, Eric Fisher, started week one on the Chiefs last season, and he's in a new position. So last year's offensive line looks completely different, although Fisher's name is on it, just in a different position, compared to this year's offensive line, and that's scary. Now, one thing that's good, about that is we all saw and know beyond the shadow of a doubt that the Chiefs' offensive line last year was an enormous problem, and I would say the biggest problem on the team. If they would have had an offensive line that was above average, or if they had a Pro Bowl offensive line, that team would have made the playoffs last year. It's my opinion. So hopefully this overhaul gels pretty quickly, although they're going to be challenged very, very early with week one and week two going Texans and Broncos, a couple of the best pass rushing teams in the league. The biggest story of the week before Andy Reid went and shook up the offensive line came with the Chiefs cutting down to their 53-man roster. As every other team in the NFL did this weekend, they had to make their second round of big cuts with several names that most Chiefs fans will recognize. So let's talk about a few guys who were released initially and maybe some reaction to a couple of them. Deron Brown, the wide receiver. Defensive end Mike Catapano. Catapano I'll go ahead and touch on now because I won't be talking about him later. This really surprised me. It seems like, though, it mostly boiled down to an issue of versatility. I think it was John Dorsey who said on Labor Day here that he's more of a fit for a 4-3 defense. And Nick Williams, who very much surprised me to make the roster, it seems to be a more versatile player in the absence of Dontari Poe, where he could be playing either he could be playing nose or end in the 3-4 defense. So Nick Williams ended up making the team, which was surprising. Safety Sanders Cummings was released, although he was released with an IR designation once again. I believe he cleared waivers and will be going to the Chiefs IR once again. Linebacker James Michael Johnson was cut, as was center Eric Cush. I'll say both of them again. Both were claimed and now with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So James Michael Johnson and Eric Cush, two guys I guess let's talk about now. James Michael Johnson started for the team last year. I think he ended up with 9 starts for the Chiefs last season. That might not be exactly, but definitely in that neighborhood. James Michael Johnson started games at inside linebacker for the Chiefs last year, and he didn't make the team right now. Now, there's nothing wrong with James Michael Johnson. What that shows you is what exactly the Chiefs have done at linebacker. Obviously, losing Derek Johnson was huge last year, but then they extend Josh Malga, draft their two rookies. The depth the Chiefs are packing at linebacker right now is unbelievable, and that's shown by the fact that they released a guy who started half the season for him last year. Also, with Eric Cush, we thought he might be starting coming into the season before the draft. I've said, I know, whenever we talk about Mitch Morse, I said if Morse takes the starting job, Cush would probably be released because Cush is not very versatile, and a guy like Zach Fulton, Andy Reid said, could play center or either guard spot. So Eric Cush might end up starting some games with the Buccaneers, but he's no longer on the Chiefs because the Chiefs need to go more versatile, and Mitch Morse took that center job. That's good news. Guard Gerard Pugsley is gone, but I believe he'll be on the practice squad, along with running back Darren Reeves and defensive back Kevin Short, both no longer with the team. Offensive tackle Derek Sherrod. Tight end Ryan Taylor, who had a very nice preseason. Fullback slash running back Spencer Ware, who had a fantastic preseason. They're all gone. As are tight end Richard Gordon, and then linebacker Desmond Moses, because the Chiefs brought in a guy later. The most surprising out of this list, I suppose you could say Mike Catapano, but the single most surprising release here was wide receiver Fred Williams. Williams had a really fantastic preseason. He made plays, especially with Chase Daniel. He made plays that other receivers just were not making. He really differentiated himself. The good news, though, is that according to Trez Paylor and some other reports, Pugsley, Fred Williams, center Daniel Munyer, defensive end David Ehring, and receiver Jerron Brown, all on the practice squad, which is all good news, especially, though, the Fred Williams addition, or keeping Fred Williams, I guess I should say, because I think he's the one guy on that list. And also Jerron Brown, the rookie draft pick, seventh-round draft pick. They have some explosiveness. They showed some nice things, and this Chiefs receiving core is it makes me nervous still. Obviously, I feel good about Jeremy Maclin. I like Albert Wilson, but that number two receiver spot, where Albert Wilson is a flex or is a slot guy for the most part, that number two receiver spot is still not really locked in for me. Frankie Hammond Jr. is the last receiver on the active roster because of his special teams contributions, I'd say, for the most part. But he also had a couple of nice plays in the preseason. But I would not be surprised one bit to see Fred Williams end up on the active roster sometime in the middle of this season and try to add a spark to this group of wide receivers. One other practice squad addition that was reported by Terez Paylor's former Virginia Tech offensive tackle Lawrence Gibson to the practice squad. So, and Andy Reid said this, so I want to make sure it's clear now. The 53-man roster, the bottom bits of it at least, and the practice squad are both pretty fluid at this point. If guys are flowing in and out of that grouping, it wouldn't surprise me at all. In fact, I believe the Chiefs still need to release one player to make room for one of the players that they have signed. Let's go ahead and talk about the new guys now, I suppose. One guy who was signed straight to the practice squad is tight end Ross Travis. Now, he's a former basketball player who played at Penn State. He hasn't played football since his freshman year of high school, but he's 6'7". One of his highlights had him dunking over a 7'1" guy at Penn State, so he has the athleticism. But that's what the Chiefs did with tight end Demetrius Harris, who's on the roster currently. He was an ex-basketball player who they put on the practice squad for a bit, I believe, and then groomed him up through the roster, really kind of rose through the ranks, and is now quite possibly the second-best tight end on this team. So they'll be doing the same thing with Ross Travis. Obviously, the most recent and most notable tight end who is an ex-basketball player is Jimmy Graham. We've also seen that from Antonio Gates and Tony Gonzalez. But it's becoming more prevalent now, and I think it's interesting that the Chiefs are going in that direction with a guy to throw on the practice squad. They also, though, I would say more interestingly, claimed tight end Brian Parker off waivers from the Chargers. So now the Chiefs at tight end are going Travis Kelce, James O'Shaughnessy, Demetrius Harris, just back from injury, and Brian Parker. And that's all currently, those guys are all currently on the roster. Obviously, Kelce and O'Shaughnessy are easy. And if they've sort of backed off Demetrius Harris a little bit, maybe he doesn't end up staying on the team. Or maybe they think Brian Parker has something to the table that one of those other guys doesn't bring. The Chiefs didn't keep quite as many receivers as most people thought. They'll be releasing one other player here in a little bit to accommodate for another signing here I'll talk about in just a second. But it's interesting that they're currently rolling with four tight ends. It makes sense for Andy Reid's offense. Alex Smith likes to use his tight ends. If you want to run a lot of two tight end sets, having four tight ends isn't the worst thing in the world, but just kind of interesting. That's a name to keep an eye on. Then Brian Parker, new tight end for the Chiefs. The other player they signed was, he became a free agent. He cleared waivers, and the Chiefs signed former Ravens offensive tackle Ja Reed. Now, that's a name that is probably vaguely familiar to a lot of NFL fans, although I would assume most of us don't know the specifics of his career arc. But that's some more offensive tackle depth, and we just talked about the offensive line a few minutes ago, where if the Chiefs are either concerned about Jeff Allen's return, maybe any of those guys getting re-injured, I don't know, and I think this is a good move for this reason, I don't know who the next best offensive tackle on this team is. Maybe it's, you have Eric Fisher, Darnold Stevenson, and you could say Jeff Allen, but other than that, it starts to get pretty icky pretty quickly, because I do not ever want to see Paul Fanica have to play offensive tackle in an actual NFL game. I think that's just asking for trouble. So bringing in Ja Reed here, we haven't, Desmond Moses was released to make room for Reed, but I believe as the recording of this show, the Chiefs need to release one more player. It wouldn't shock me if that was an offensive lineman, but they put some guaranteed money into Fanica. Zach Fulton is backing up at guard and center. Same story with Jeff Allen. So we don't know who that would be yet. I don't even know who to expect at this point. Maybe it's one of those tight ends, but if it was a tight end, it would have to be Demetrius Harris. So at this point, just got to go hands off and flow through, remembering that the bottom of the roster right now for the Chiefs is very fluid, as is the practice squad. So keep an eye on it. I'll be tweeting my thoughts immediately as stuff happens on Twitter at JB Briscoe if you want to stay informed that way. And that was not even a planned self-promotion. It just sort of happened organically. All right, so I took a short lunch break. Whenever I came back, the Chiefs announced their first 10-man practice squad. So let's look at the specific and so far exact practice squad. Wide receiver Jerron Brown, we talked about. Totally happy with that. defensive tackle Hebron Fungupo. I'm sorry. I just figured out how to say Laurent Duvernay-Tardif and Paul Fanica, so I'm going to take a little longer to get Hebron. Then tackle Lawrence Gibson, cornerback Jeremy Harris, defensive lineman David Irving, center, who I mentioned earlier, Daniel Munier, guard Gerard Pugsley, who was listed as a tackle elsewhere, tight end Ross Travis, the Penn State player, fullback Spencer Ware, which I think is an awesome thing to get to keep him around because he ran with such fire, and wide receiver Fred Williams. The release that the Chiefs made to make space for the other signings was linebacker Josh Martin. Though now as I'm looking through Twitter, I'm seeing a couple of things talking about him going to injured reserve. Regardless if he's on IR or released, either way he's not on the team this year. So it also looks like people on Twitter are starting to at least predict some panic as far as outside linebackers go for the Chiefs. I could not be in a more far away camp from that. Andy Reid said the other inside linebacker position next to Jerick Johnson is Josh Malgas to lose. Ramique Wilson led the team in tackles this preseason, though, among with the other rookie draft pick, and the fact that their outside linebackers are Justin Houston, Tom Bahaly, and Dee Ford, who have all looked obviously fantastic in different places at different times. I think the linebacker core is still the strongest part, probably on this entire team, with an honorable mention at least to the safeties. So I am very far away from worrying about the linebacker depth, especially even seeing these guys get released or put to IR or whatever. The Chiefs seem to feel good about the top of their linebacker depth as well as the middle sections. So losing a couple of guys who we know their names because they've been relevant in years past, but losing them off the bottom of the depth chart, there's no reason to panic. So if you want to panic about something with the Chiefs, find something else. Panic about the offensive line. Do not panic about the linebackers on this team. I think they're in a very, very good place. Now let's look at some other stories, some other bits of news. One really surprising piece of news comes with Dontari Poe, where Andy Reid, he looked like Poe practiced partially on Monday, Labor Day, but Andy Reid says there's a little bit of a chance that he shows up for week one in Houston, which would really, really surprise me. I was pretty much settled into the idea that he was going to miss the first four games. Anything less than that would have been a pleasant surprise. And at this point, I wouldn't have him travel to Houston. I'd say, you just lay on a couch somewhere in Kansas City, wait till we get back, and then be ready Thursday against the Broncos. Not because I think the Texans are a pushover. They're not. That game will be a very physical game, and it'll be a challenge. But I would say hold off until Thursday night at home against the Broncos. It'll be the Chiefs' best chance to knock off the Broncos at home in the Peyton Manning era. And don't rush back. Take your time. Get the extra four days of rest there from Sunday to Thursday. Everybody on the Broncos, the entire Broncos offensive line, and all of the Chiefs will have played a game 4 days earlier. Give yourself that extra time, and then get in and get ready to go against the Broncos, if that's actually even a possibility. So that's a pretty incredible update. Last week, the show was finished a little bit before we heard anything about Travis Kelce and him leaving practice with his at that point, leg injury. We've since found out that it was a pretty mild ankle sprain, which at some point, it sounded like it could have been anything from a high ankle sprain to an ACL. So you didn't get to hear my panic at that point, but it was panic because he is so important to this offense. But he'll be back. It seems like he's also back to practice. He should be ready to go against the Texans. Another thing that happened in the NFL on a wide level, they got a lot of news, is that that Washington proclaimed Kirk Cousins as their starter for the entire season, and Robert Griffin III, his fall from grace in Washington pretty much just became complete. Now, I'm bringing that to this show because Charles Robinson wrote for Yahoo Sports. He wrote four bad fits and then one good fit. His one good fit was the Kansas City Chiefs. Let me read a little bit of what he said, and then we'll talk about it a little more. He writes, "Coach Andy Reid spent more than a decade on a similar roller coaster with Donovan McNabb. There were rough times when McNabb was passive-aggressive, said the wrong thing at the wrong time, rubbed some teammates the wrong way, and annoyingly had his mother at seemingly every practice. Sometimes he was a joy off the field, other times he was tone-deaf and awkward. Some guys loved his personality, others thought he was a diva, square, phony, too commercial, etc. Sound familiar? That said, there was no doubting that he was tougher on the field than Griffin. He had a physique that could take a lot of punishment, and from a short to long perspective, he was a more complete passer, too." He continues with McNabb, and then he talks about Andy Reid developing him in the West Coast system. quote, just like he has with his current quarterback, Alex Smith, not to mention Smith's backup, Chase Daniel. And lest we forget, Reed helped pull Michael Vick's career off the scrap heap, too. Griffin's skills would translate well into Reed's system. Reed is equipped to handle Griffin's so-called peculiar nature and fit inside a locker room. McNabb, Vick, and Smith have all presented unique challenges at different points in their careers. There's a vast amount of experience in coaching that threesome, and solving whatever is blocking Griffin isn't the biggest challenge of the group. Frankly, overhauling Vick's game after his prison stint was one of the most impressive coaching jobs I've seen since I started covering the NFL 15 years ago. He goes on to write about how the Chiefs' locker room makes sense for Robert Griffin. John Dorsey would be the right GM for Robert Griffin. I think this is very interesting. Now, it seems at this point like Washington's going to keep RG3 on the roster throughout the season. But the next year, the Chiefs will be, although they signed Tyler Bray to a two-year extension, but the Chiefs will be in a different situation quarterback-wise because they'll have Alex Smith, Chase Daniel will be a free agent, and I would assume be gone, and it'll be Aaron Murray and Tyler Bray competing for the second job, with the other one presumably falling into the third spot. However, as I've talked about in the last couple of shows, or I think maybe it was last week, I like to have a third quarterback or a developmental quarterback where you believe his ceiling is very high, and you have a second quarterback who you feel safe with. Well, I think Robert Griffin could fall into either of those categories, but certainly the one with the high potential. Now, he could get hurt and completely fall out of the league entirely, and I get that. I understand that's a real fear, and that's one reason I wouldn't want him as my starter right now. But as a developmental guy with a very high ceiling falling into Andy Reid's system, I think that would be a fascinating fit and one that I'd be all in favor for. Now, I wouldn't be trading draft picks. I don't even think I would give up Chase Daniel for him right now because I think Chase Daniel's that valuable to this team if Alex Smith gets injured. But in the future, or even next year, trying to get a hold of Robert Griffin to bring him over to Andy Reid, I think makes a lot of sense. It makes total sense for Robert Griffin. If Griffin has a say in it, he should be on his way to Kansas City as soon as he is possibly allowed to, because Andy Reid is who he should be with. Then, though, it depends on if the Chiefs think he's worth it, if the Chiefs have a spot for Griffin. So I would support that. I would support bringing in a big talent like Griffin to try to develop, to let Reed try to reel him back in. But if anybody won't be interested, it would be the Chiefs, not Griffin. Griffin belongs with Andy Reid if he can get to him. I've talked about Tyler Bray somewhere, but I can't remember when or where, so I'm going to go ahead and touch on Tyler Bray again here quickly. The Chiefs signed Bray to a two-year extension through 2017 with a base value of nearly $2 million, no guarantees. According to Field Yates, as part of the deal for Bray, the Chiefs agreed to pay his full salary of $510,000 for 2015 while he's on the non-football injury list. And then Arrowhead Pride pointed out that looking down the road, Chase Daniel leaves after this year, Murray and Bray would battle for the number two spot, which I just mentioned just ahead of this. This is really interesting because it takes the quarterback situation into the future with a guy like Tyler Bray, is that high-ceiling guy I've talked about in the past. It gives the Chiefs an explosive arm. Andy Reid's talked about Bray this offseason. He said he was immature when he came into the league. But now you look at what he has. He's got some incredible physical tools. And I think a little bit last year and also this year, the Chiefs are playing a little bit of a game with him and saying, look, we're going to put you on these injury lists because we can't carry four quarterbacks. And right now it needs to be Chase Daniel and Aaron Murray. But we wanted to develop you. And Andy Reid should have that kind of pull. He should be able to say, listen, you just need to sit back for a second, give us a chance to work with you, and then after Chase Daniel leaves, you and Aaron Murray are going to have a real chance to fight for the backup spot. So I hope that's how it's going with the Chiefs and with Tyler Bray. Well, the other thing I talked about, I know I talked about last week, is Aaron Murray's ceiling. If his career went perfectly, he'd be Alex Smith. If Aaron Murray's career went well, he'd be Chase Daniel. Tyler Bray has Joe Flacco's arm. He has a real cannon. It's other issues that are the challenge for Bray. So if you were going to tell me that between Aaron Murray and Tyler Bray, one of them would be a superstar, I'd say there's a 5% chance for Aaron Murray and a 7% chance for Tyler Bray or something like that. Although Murray is definitely, without question, the safer pick. And if you said, well, one of these guys will be a good NFL quarterback, I would take Aaron Murray every time. But if you said one of these guys is going to develop into a big-armed superstar, Tyler Bray has a chance of bringing that to the table. So all that said, and also all the stuff with RG3 being said, I think it's a good signing for the Chiefs. I'm glad that they did it because they think they have an actual developmental quarterback there that's worth a couple million dollars to hold on to, see what they can turn him into. Something I should have mentioned at the top of the show is with the roster changes, the Chiefs traded safety Kelsey McCray to the Seahawks for a fifth-round draft pick, which is also what they gave up. Now that I realize, they gave up that for Ben Grubbs. So essentially they traded a safety who will not be who's not going to make the team, who's going to be the last safety out of the roster, in my opinion. They traded him for their starting left guard. If you want to make that fifth round flip around draft picks, you want to make that basically even. So obviously getting a fifth round draft pick for a guy who was probably not going to make your team is fantastic. I thought getting Ben Grubbs for a fifth round pick was fantastic. So both of those moves I'm completely on board with. It's nice for Kelsey McCray. He's going to go to one of the best teams in the league and have a chance to make an impact. It's great for the Chiefs because he wasn't going to have a chance to be here. And so they added a fifth-round pick to their draft repertoire for next year. I took notes throughout the Chiefs game against the St. Louis Rams, in which the Chiefs took back or won the Governor's Cup in a game where no starters played, or no Chiefs starters played, I should say. But frankly, most of it would be wasting your time at this point. There were a lot of interesting things that happened here and there with certain players and how it impacted if they would make the team or not. And if I would have done this show before the roster moves, we would talk about those. But because we already talked about the cuts and the guys who played well and didn't make the team or ended up on the practice squad like Spencer Ware and Fred Williams and Deron Brown, it would be sort of a waste to talk about the Rams game specifically. So I'm going to gloss over that. The Chiefs won and went to their fourth victory this preseason, obviously ending it 4-0. That's the fourth time ever, the Chiefs have gone undefeated in the preseason. They did that in 1960, 1966, and 1969. And one of those years, the Chiefs were in the Super Bowl, and the next year, one of the other years, they won the Super Bowl. So I say, take this undefeated preseason, bet the house, bet the kids' college tuition funds, bet the kid. Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl this year. It's easy. This is easy. 1966, season ended in Super Bowl I. 1969, they won Super Bowl IV. Bet it all. Put it all on the Chiefs. It's over, really. The preseason is the real challenge here, and that's been conquered by the Kansas City Chiefs. So, a 4-0 preseason. The most important word there is preseason, so none of it matters on a large level. The wins and losses don't matter. The famous 0-16 Detroit Lions were 4-0 in the preseason. But I think it does mean some good things. Greg Rosenthal, going at this off the top of my head, but Greg Rosenthal put together a write-up on NFL.com where he has the Chiefs finishing third in the AFC West, which, honestly, I can actually see a situation where that happens. If you want to say the Chiefs are the third best team in the AFC West, you say Peyton Manning bounces back, and you say Phillip Rivers and Melvin Gordon put together the Chargers' offense and that their defense steps up. There's an argument to be made there. I'm okay with that. But one of his gripes about the Chiefs is that they have some subpar players starting, like on the defensive line, which to me is absurd. And even more absurdly, he said that the Chiefs don't have the kind of roster depth that a successful team has. And I think this preseason showed the opposite of that pretty strongly. Even against a team like the Seahawks, the Chiefs' backups beat the other team's backups. And again, those are depth guys. Those are guys fighting for roster positions. Those are guys, many of whom won't see the field. I understand. I don't need anyone to explain to me that the preseason doesn't actually matter. The wins and losses aren't important. I'm fully aware. But the way those players play does matter, and it matters to them. And it depends if they get a job or not. And then it matters for the Chiefs throughout the season because depth in the NFL is hugely important. So seeing the Chiefs' depth beat four other teams' depth, although the Rams and the Titans, you wouldn't have expected to put up much of a challenge. But the Seahawks and the Cardinals both have some pretty deep rosters and pretty talented rosters. So seeing the Chiefs reach out past those teams and take this undefeated preseason, that's a good sign for the team's depth, regardless of what Greg Rosenthal wants to write about. So that's all I can say with conviction about this preseason. There were definitely bright spots there, but we'll forget about the preseason. For better or for worse, we will forget about the preseason by week 4, 5, or 6 because the actual games will be going on, and that's what actually matters. Thank you for listening to Roughing the Kicker here on Arrowhead Addict Radio, arrowheadaddict.com. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, never miss an episode. And please check out the Patreon page, patreon.com/RTK, to see how you can help support the show. I want to be going twice a week for the regular season. I want to be able to have guests and callers on the show. I want to be able to do interviews and have you come voice your opinions. I want to make sure everybody can get this show through the iTunes page. I want to make sure that my hardware keeps working and we can invest in more and more to continue making this show bigger and better. And I can do that only with your help. So check out patreon.com/RTK. I'm Joshua Briscoe at JB Briscoe on Twitter. As always, thank you for your time. And I want to hear what you think of this show, this episode, the direction of this show. Do you want to hear two shows a week through the off season before and after each game? I'd love to be able to provide that for you. So let me know if you'll be listening when that time comes around. But until then, I'm going to be doing some push-ups in case the Chiefs need help on the right side of the offensive line. Bye, Mom!
Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the bass?